The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
The Summer Economic Plan has been released, which sets out parameters for the forthcoming budget. And here in studio with me to talk about all of this is the Minister for Public Expenditure, National Development Plan Delivery and Reform, Pascal Donohue. Minister, good morning and welcome.
Good morning to you, Pascal.
Now, there's lots of other stuff going on besides the kind of boring tedium of economic
plans.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that are currently in the news. A plot to kill Leo Varadkar.
Well, we are in an atmosphere at the moment. It's been underlined for us by what has happened elsewhere in the world, in that political violence and attempted political violence has become far more of an issue than we would ever want or ever expect. I always make the point, Pat, in these kind of discussions, that the vast, overwhelming majority of people, particularly in this country, behave in such a civil and understanding way to politicians. That's been my experience. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there are a small number of threats that are increasing. The guards do an incredible job dealing with that. But we can never give way. We can never give an inch to that kind of approach. And we can never allow it to contaminate how we talk about politics here in Ireland.
And the idea that someone from an overseas special force would be employed to have a pop.
Well,
I
really don't know about all of that. And I think I'll leave it to real experts to comment on that. Leo, some of us have had to deal with difficulties at times, but we're really well supported by the guards and their work. Mm. But as difficult as those moments are, they can't diminish your appetite for politics or the importance of politics. And it's a really small, tiny minority of people who act like
that. Do you think that it might have impacted on his decision not just to give up the top job, but to exit from the political sphere?
No, I really don't. I'm really going to miss Leo. He is a really incredible human being and politician. In politics, you have many, many ups and downs. And it is a craft in which resilience is particularly important. And I can tell you, Leo Varadkar was as tough as they come. And I honestly don't think the behaviour of such a small minority influenced him. I think he just decided his time was done for other reasons and more positive reasons. And honestly, I wish him all the best in the future.
Now, when we talk about those individual threats, and various ministers and politicians have experienced threats of at whatever level, low level or high level, certainly the level of violence that we've seen in Coolock in recent days is unprecedented, really.
It is. I unreservedly condemn it. And
it's like a scene. Looking at the front of the Irish Times yesterday, a guy in a balaclava hurling, whether it's a petrol bomb or a brick or whatever it might be, it's like Belfast in 1972, 73.
And it's really important that we don't seek to legitimise that by offering different explanations or justifications as to why it has happened. That kind of behaviour is fundamentally unacceptable. It's not a protest, it's violence. And that is why we have to not give an inch to that kind of behaviour.
Do you think that's opportunism by a particular cohort, or is it a response to some fundamental malaise?
My own view is that while, of course, there are issues of disenfranchisement and exclusion that we always need to reflect on as a democracy, they do not justify and cannot be used to explain that kind of behaviour. It's violence. And that is why the role of An Garda Síochána and giving them our full support is so important. Ireland is a country that works very hard at having inclusivity, having an inclusive economic model. Of course, we have many difficulties. Of course, we have things that we need to do better. But those things that we need to do better on can't be used to legitimise the threats to our guards and the threats to people who are really destitute and refugees who come to our country, let alone communities such as Coolock, who don't deserve this and deserve so much better.
The public order unit, a member of the Gardaí was in touch with us yesterday saying the message to the public should be, if you see this kind of stuff going on, whether it's petrol bombs or whatever it might be, get out of the way. The public order unit will have to do their job, and if you stay, you will be sprayed.
And I think the overwhelming majority of our country, if not everybody, if they see violence like that, their instinctive reaction is to leave, to make themselves safe and not get in the way of the guards. That's my experience of those kind of situations. And unfortunately, if somebody finds themselves in the midst of all of that, while the guards do all they can and do so much and put their own lives and health at risk to protect innocent people and innocent bystanders, they're fundamentally violent and dangerous environments. Thank God they're still rare. Thank God you and I are in a position that you're making the point to me that this is nearly without precedent. And long may that be the case in Ireland. But when it does happen, we need to respond back in the way the guards did. Of course, we need to look at the long-term issues. And of course, we need to look at how we can manage the influx of people into our country that is happening due to states breaking down, that is happening due to climate change in a fair way and in a compassionate way. But I go back to a point I made at the start of our exchange here. None of that can be used to justify violence.
Did the government kind of come late to this issue in handling it correctly? I mean, I was getting off a plane last Saturday evening and I got off the plane and walked to the terminal building, and at the door of the terminal building, I was met by a guard who asked me for my passport.
Yeah.
And I was happy
I'm sure he recognised you
He did, but I insisted.
He can't signal you out for preferential treatment.
I insisted on showing him my passport, even though he did give me the nod. Hello. But that's something you're doing now, which wasn't being done maybe when this crisis was beginning.
So I think there is a fair point to be made and acknowledged that the scale of the increase in migration and the demand on our refugee programme increased so quickly that we were responding back in emergency mode for some time. And just to outline what that is, in a normal year in Ireland, we would have had 4,000 to 6,000 people per year come to Ireland on our international protection programme, or in other words, a refugee programme for our country. That went up fivefold and nearly sixfold at one point. And it did put a lot of demands upon us. Do I think we were late to it? I don't believe we were. But do I accept that we were responding back in an emergency way and having to change our policy at different points? Yes, but that's only because we found ourselves, like every other European country did, in a migration crisis due to what's happening in the Middle East, due to what's happening in Sudan. Of course, overlaid then by the awful war in Ukraine.
I heard someone, criticise people for saying we have open borders, saying, oh, no, we don't. But we do, because of the Northern Ireland border. We do have an open border.
We do have an open border. And because of our membership of the European Union, we have a single market in which movement in and out of our country is really easy to do. But I would argue that is fundamental to our country, to our prosperity, fundamental to how our country has changed. And if you look at our health services, if you look at our economy in general, all levels of our economy, openness is fundamental to us, and we have really benefited from it. And I will always make the case, and make the case as strongly as I can, that while we have a refugee and international protection program, which we should have, because leaving aside the legal protections and obligations that we have, the vast majority of people who come looking for refugee status here to our country have nothing and have come from awful conditions. And we have to be compassionate and fair to them. But alongside that, Ireland has an open economic and social model that has made us richer, made us safer, and allowed us to achieve more. And we can never lose sight of making
the case.
We're
edging towards the...
Hey, this is Buck Joffrey, and if you are a high-paid professional looking to break free from the golden handcuffs, listen closely. Now, I went from being a busy surgeon to a real estate investor with over $2 billion in assets under management. And now I'm on a mission to share the wealth-building secrets of the ultra-rich with you. Imagine legally paying little or no taxes, shielding your assets from risk, and investing in distressed real estate during the current real estate meltdown. Did you know, for example, that right now, the high interest rates have created a rare chance in the market to buy discounted apartment buildings? By seizing this moment, you can position yourself for massive gains when rates inevitably drop. And I'll tell you what, that is exactly what we do in my podcast community together. Don't settle for conventional wisdom. Let me show you how the economy works and how you can use financial education to achieve true financial freedom. Tune into the Wealth Formula Podcast with me, Buck Joffrey, and take control of your financial destiny.
discussing the economy now and the budget and so on, because when you talk about an open economy, there's the prospect of a President Trump who may introduce changes to the taxation system in the United States, which could impact on the presence of the foreign direct investment companies here. Is that a concern?
Of course, I have to recognize this as a prospect. It will be the second time that we have gone through this cycle. It happened in his first presidency as well. And if he were to be re-elected and elected, it's a choice he may make. It's worth noting this would have a very considerable impact on America's borrowing needs across the time ahead. And there's many other things that a Trump presidency may wish to do. But were that to happen, there are three points that I would make. Firstly, we still have a very stable, very predictable and low corporate tax regime here in Ireland. Secondly, it will only emphasise further the need for the long-term economic investments that our country is about to make with regard to the electric grid in Ireland, with regard to water, with regard to public transport. And then finally, I go back to the point you interrogated me on earlier, making the case for an open and predictable economic and social model, I believe will actually be a competitive advantage for Ireland and for our economy amidst change happening elsewhere. And I really believe they're the three pillars of how Ireland would respond back if faced with that.
Now, one of the bonuses, I suppose, for the Minister for Finance and indeed for yourself in the forthcoming budget for Budget 2025 is the money that's available. We're talking about $8.3 billion as a total package. Mm-hmm. That's got to cover increases to the health service, got to any wage increases and so on, as well as some taxation package. Talk of inheritance tax changing maybe to restore it to where it was in real money terms. What can you tell us?
I can tell you
nothing.
I can tell you very little because as somebody who's involved in the budget formation and is working very closely with our Minister for Finance, Minister Chambers, they are decisions that can only be revealed on budget day for very important economic reasons. Minister Chambers has, however, made the point that once we look at any changes that we can make in relation to personal taxation, that I believe should be our first priority when it comes to taxation, the space that is left for additional measures is going to be quite limited. Mm. And we're all going to get asked questions about it. And I think we can point to other changes that may be made. But fundamentally, if we don't continue to, for example, increase the rate at which people pay the higher rate of income tax within our country, it affects our competitiveness, but people will end up paying more tax only because their wages have gone up, which nearly all of the time is due to their own hard work.
But if there was a tax package of $1.4 billion, and suppose it all went on income tax relief, if you think there are 4 million people working in the economy, I don't know how many people would be benefiting from that kind of tax regime, but you're talking no more than a couple, maybe 300 or 400 per taxpayer, if it all went to them, and it won't.
And I make the, if we get to that point and when we do, what I will always make the case for is you shouldn't see any budget in isolation. You should look at where we are budget by budget in the round. When this government came into office and even before that, when I started off as Minister for Finance, that equivalent point was €34,000. It was approximately 34,000. It's now well in excess of €40,000. And if you ever do any one budget, and after that budget, everybody in the country instantly feels a lot better off, you're probably on the verge of making the kind of mistakes that we have made in the past.
Speaking of which, there's a process which I think you inaugurated for a kind of a benchmarking of people in the semi-state sector to compare them to people in the private sector, which only means one thing, up. That those remunerations will go up at some cost to those companies. And it reminds me of the extraordinary exercise of benchmarking all those years ago, which had terrible effects.
But there's a fundamental difference between what I'm doing on benchmarking. The benchmarking process implied to do all of our public service. And we have not done that now since that process was completed. And in fact, we are now in the early phase of a wage agreement in which wage growth in our public services is in line with what's happening elsewhere in the economy. And it's trying to be fair to everybody. To deal with your particular point, it just remains the case that there are a number of roles, particularly in our semi-state organisations, in which we have people doing that work. in which the private sector can offer them an awful lot more money. And particularly in the area of infrastructure, where we're building really, really big, complex projects, some of the people who are doing that work can earn an awful lot more if they do the similar work in the private sector.
This already happened in the case of Metro, because the individual recruited for that process is being paid far more than the Taoiseach.
He is, and that is an example of it. And I accept this is a difficult argument to make, but it's one I do, I'm compelled to make. If you look at building a metro, it'll be the biggest public transport project our country has ever done, but lots of other countries have done it before, and lots of other countries are building them as we speak. But the number of people from an engineering perspective in particular who can do this work and run these projects is relatively small, and lots of other countries want them. And if we want to do things like the metro well, and if we want in particular the really big energy projects that we have to complete be well done, then I have to acknowledge there's only a small number of people who can do this work. And in order to get them, we need to pay them competitively. And as opposed to plucking figures out of a private process or deciding what those figures are in isolation, we've a process underway to advise the government on how to do it.
Now, one of the news stories today is about a report from within the Department of Housing, looking, it would appear, for funds to invest more in housing for rent in this economy. And we're talking maybe about, you can have the bad word, the Vulture Fund, but you can also have the New York City Police Pension Fund or whatever, or the Teachers of Milwaukee Pension Fund investing. But one of the concerns people have is that if you establish a regime whereby everybody's renting, what happens when they retire? They can't afford to rent.
And that is why we have the auto-enrolment programme that has been launched by Minister Heather Humphreys. Because you're right, there's a real risk that we will have many people within our society who will find that they don't have the income they need later in life because the state pension isn't sufficient. And this is why what we are doing is launching a scheme, which Heather Humphreys has been at the heart of, where the state will, in essence, support the private contributions that people are making into a new pension scheme and ask employers to do the same. And this is one of these projects in politics that for years really won't yield any benefits to people who are in it. In a decade's time, will be absolutely essential.
But the idea that you're saving up for your future rent, when in the past most people of, you know, middle incomes would aspire to own their own house and therefore be rent free by the time they retired. And there seems to be a fundamental societal change in this regard, a policy change almost, to turn the population into renters.
We don't have that intent. And in fact, the majority of people within our country, the vast majority of people within our country still want to own a home, and that's what we want them to do. And in fact, if you look at the number of renters that we would have within our economy and our society, and I rented myself for many, many years, we would have a comparatively small share of renters as a share of home occupiers versus many other parts of Europe. And if you look at where we are in housing now, we still have so much more progress we need to make. But due to the work of the government and the work of Minister Dara O'Brien, you know, 34,000 homes were commenced in the first 5 months of this year. This is a really, if you compare it to where we are to many other countries in Europe, this is a very, very strong performance.
But these are not necessarily houses, they're units.
Well, they're homes.
Homes, yeah.
32,000 homes.
But that's the point. How many of those are just for rent?
A small number of them will be for rent. The majority of them
In the area where I live, virtually every new block is for rent only.
If you look at apartment development, it is absolutely, I think, a fair point that many of the apartments that are being built are for rent. And that's something that we need to change. It's expensive to build an apartment in particular. And in many cases, what is happening is private capital is coming in, which we really need to build rental accommodation, which we also need. So what I'd say, Pat, overall, is we need a mix. We need both. But the focus of the government is still that for the majority of the new homes that have been built, 32,000 in the first 5 months of this year, after delivering really important targets next year, the majority of them will still be for people to buy and own.
Finally, Minister, I should ask you, you've been a long time in power now, and who knows whether there will be a return of Pascal Dunhu in some ministerial role in the next government. So, regrets?
Regrets.
You know, things that you'd love to have done.
God. If I look back over the years I've been in government, I'm thinking very quickly on my feet. I'm reflected more on things that I've been able to be part of rather than intense regret regard to anything. I look back and where we are on the issues that you've just touched on there, from housing to where we are with inclusivity in our economy and our society. And of course, you wouldn't be human if you weren't to look back and think, what could you have done differently or better? I have that feeling about lots of things, but I also have always tried to do my best.
And this sounds like regrets. I have a few, but too few to mention.
Well, we nearly went into a song there, didn't we? But thankfully, in the interest of your listeners, both of us have refrained from doing that.
All right,
of course, you always look at the challenges our country has and think, what could we have done differently or better? And to not say I don't feel like that at times would be to not acknowledge that I'm human, but I've done my best in the different things I've been involved in and hope to be able to do it for a while longer.
Minister for Public Expenditure, National Development Plan Delivery and Reform, Pascal Donoghue, thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy the holiday.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
For almost 40 years, DR Power Equipment has been the go-to for homeowners who want professional-level outdoor power equipment. Whether you're managing acres of overgrown fields or just want to have the best lawn on the block, DR Power has everything you need to conquer your piece of the outdoors. Visit drpower.com today to learn more and shop the sale.